Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode in our Build Your Hybrid Cloud series here on TechNet Radio on Channel 9. Today, we're in episode number 22, and we're going to talk all about automation with one of our key partners in the automation and orchestration space, Chef. And to help us out here today, we've got a special guest that's joining us, Steve Morosky from Chef. Hey, Steve, how's it going? Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's going great. It's going great, Keith. I appreciate the opportunity to come out and talk with you and talk a little bit about Chef and configuration management in general and PowerShell, desired state configuration, all that great stuff that's keeping me busy.
Awesome. And for those, I know you're very active in the community already, Steve, but for those that may not know you, can you spend a few minutes just giving a brief intro of yourself, your role at Chef, and whatnot?
You bet. I'm on the community engineering team. I'm one of our software developers. Most of my previous history, though, has been as a sysadmin or a IT pro in the Microsoft space. Okay. Most recently, I was at Stack Exchange and implemented desired state configuration there across a number of the Windows systems there. I've been a PowerShell MVP for 4 years now. So I've been fortunate enough to talk enough about PowerShell to have been been granted that honor. And basically at Chef, on the community engineering team, we're a mix of kind of evangelists, but also we're also building the product day by day. So good to work across all of our various open source projects.
I see. So as a community focused software development engineer, are you then working with organizations that are beginning to leverage Chef and taking their feedback back to your product teams or helping to incorporate that into new cookbooks or other extensions of the Chef platform?
Yeah, there's definitely some of that, but our main engagement is in IRC, things like this, in GitHub, out at conferences, user groups, podcasts, all various types of engagement. A lot of our consultants and solutions architects, they're out engaging, and our customer success engineers, they're out engaging with our customers, people who are going through and implementing. Where I'm engaging more on our community side, getting people involved in the Chef community, building cookbooks, helping contribute to the core Chef code base. One of the things that we really try to do is encourage people to get involved. And if there's a pet bug that they have, hey, we welcome your contribution. And we're actively trying to get people from outside our community to contribute to our code base and become maintainers of our software. We have a weekly Chef developers meeting where the direction of Chef is shaped by our community.
Wow.
And so we have an RFC process that anybody can participate in. The discussions are all out in the open, either in IRC or in GitHub. And one of the core tenets of my team is to help encourage that process, make it easy for people to become part of our community.
I see. That's great. Awesome. Well, for those of our listeners that are tuning in with us today that may not be real familiar with Chef and what it can do for them, how would you describe the role that Chef can play for them? How can it benefit organizations?
So Chef is an automation platform where most people are familiar with Chef, and kind of the core competency of Chef is this infrastructure as code space where we can basically build executable documentation of our systems. So one of the things we go, anyone who's deployed a number of systems has gone through a process where I stood up a system once, I went through, maybe it was using the command line, maybe I was using a UI, I stood it up, I got it working the way I want it to. Now I got to go back and document what I actually did. The more proactive of us, we're building a list as we went.
And, right.
And maybe you have a wiki somewhere with some scripts, snippets of script copy-pasted into it. And, over time, that evolves to a deployment script. And maybe now we're pre-baking images, or we have VM templates, or things like that. And we get a little further down the automation chain. Then The one challenge is a lot of this stuff tends to, the updating of the templates, the updating of the documentation, the maintenance of the scripts tend to fall behind. They tend to be a little out of date compared to what's actually going on in production. And so standing up production-like replicas gets to be a challenge, or migrating to new platforms gets to be a challenge, testing new patches, things like that, because it's very difficult to replicate what I have in production. We also tend to make a lot of interactive changes in our environments and, you know, one-off kind of things. So what infrastructure as code tools like Chef, like desired state configuration do for you is allow you to describe the structure of your systems in a in kind of a results way, results-oriented way. So it's you're not saying how I want to get there. So I'm not saying I'm not busting out my PowerShell skills and going install -windows feature and web-server and having it install a web server for me. I'm saying I want to have a web server installed. I don't really care how you get there. I don't care what was there before. I want a web server installed. And in, so you're kind of stepping away from the how do I get there, where you have to know about the state of where those systems were beforehand, to saying, I want it to look like this. It makes setting up an environment very repeatable. It makes it very painless because now that I've got this executable documentation, I've got my, you know, the end result of how I want my systems to look, mm-hmm. and I have an agent that's there whose job it is to get to that state. Now if I want to spin up a test environment for our developers, or maybe we're looking at upgrading to the next version of some software package, maybe Exchange, right? And I want to stand up a side-by-side environment to test it in. I can actually take those same specs, change the metadata that I feed into it, the stuff that's specific to it, that environment. Because what we also can do with it, with this documentation, is instead of me embedding like a connection string into my deployment script for my web server, I separate that out and I can set that aside and have the node identify itself as I'm production. So I should go get the production values and have those brought in separately. So we start making our development, we're actually developing our infrastructure here, and we're making it data driven. So now when I want to stand up my environment on the side, I can change all those values because now I'm going to use a different domain because that's going to be my test domain, and I have one that have nothing to do with my production domain. So I'm going to change those values, create a new environment for it to get that information from, and then when those test servers spin up, they'll get the correct information for their test environment and have nothing to do with production.
Sure, yeah. So, and that kind of orchestrated declarative approach, I think, is so key to help organizations really cash in on the agility promises that a cloud platform can provide, right? So that you're not going through and having to basically repeat your processes in the cloud manually that you've been doing, that a lot of organizations have manually done for years and years in the on-premises space, to really be able to, as you said, kind of use it to not only document, but execute into repeatable processes. Do you see that as one of the key ways that organizations are really operationalizing their investment in cloud technologies?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Actually, so ChefConf was a couple weeks ago, and we had a host of people talking about how they use Chef. But one of them was MSN. So MSN uses Chef to help manage their deployments in Azure. Wow. And they're using it to actually manage the PaaS, the web role. And so one of the whole concepts there is, you know, and you can replicate the same results with the infrastructure as a service kind of space as well. But the idea is, I don't necessarily know how many servers I'm going to have. I don't, you know, depending on what the demand is, I might need to scale way out. I might need to shrink way back to save a little bit of money, you know, depending on what the workload demands are. Maybe I have a big batch processing job and I need to scale out. If I'm manually configuring these things, or I'm configuring them on a script that's based on a particular state, or I'm going off of documentation, elastic scale just doesn't work because now I have to do too much manually, too much. Sure. I have too much manual intervention that I have to make in my environment. And when I need to change things, yeah, PowerShell scales out really well for change. I can invoke command and hit thousands of servers.
Right.
But in order for me to make that change consistently, safely, I need to know what their beginning state is and what the end state I want to get to is. Where if I'm using a declarative configuration management tool, I change my state that I want it to, my end state that I want it to be, and it's the client's node's responsibility to get themselves there.
Sure.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, so anytime you want to talk about going to cloud scale, if you're not investing in some tool for configuration management, whether, you know, whether you're doubling down on DSC, whether you're going with Chef, which I think actually helps make that DSC experience better. But hey, you know, there's a, you know, or you're looking at Puppet or Ansible or Salt, anything right. in this space, if you're looking to achieve that kind of cloud scale, even if you're only talking, even if my cloud scale is 1 node to 10 nodes,
right,
it's still, if I need to scale out in the middle of the night, I don't want to get paged to have to go configure a bunch of servers because traffic's coming in, because traffic in, you know, in Japan is really high right now. And so now I need to actually spin up some more nodes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's not exciting to me.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I'd rather sleep and then attack problems in the day when I have a full night of rest in front of me.
Right. I think Jeffrey Snover describes it as managing your cloud application systems as cattle and not as pets, right? Being able right. to kind of guide them and not have to worry about the individual state of every single one of those systems.
So I love that analogy of the cattle versus pets. One thing people tend to miss in that is they think, oh, well, that only applies if I have herds and herds of cattle. And so if I have, you know, thousands of servers, then this stuff matters to me. This stuff matters in the small and medium business as well.
Right.
And I think it matters more because we tend to be a lot fewer, there tends to be a lot fewer staff there, especially, and they tend to be much broader in focus, right?
Right.
So having this stuff just handled for you, you know, putting the, I mean, not to mean, not to imply that configuration management is trivial. It is not in any sense of the word.
Right.
But you put in the effort up front, and then it's managed for you behind the scenes. It will save you tons and tons of time and enable you to do so much more interesting stuff. You know, now I can start working on that centralized event log management that I wanted to do, or now I can start implementing, you know, some more proactive things I can do to show the business what kind of value they're getting for the money.
Right.
And, you know, and doing things to better enable new projects.
Definitely. So I know your Chef has a lot of notoriety and familiarity in the world of Linux admins, Linux workloads and whatnot. But for shops that are primarily Windows-based and looking at deploying Windows on a cloud platform like Azure or maybe in their own private cloud using System Center and Hyper-V, does Chef still have a lot of relevance in the Windows world as well?
Oh, definitely. So one of the key reasons I decided to go work for Chef. So I had kind of a dream job. I was working at Stack Exchange, helping deliver Stack Overflow and other great Q&A sites. It was a super interesting environment, worked with a lot of smart people, got to solve interesting problems at scale. And at scale with traffic, not necessarily numbers of servers. We actually ran on a pretty thin margin of servers there. But we did awesome scale. And the reason I actually decided to go to Chef was because of the investment that they were putting into the Windows community.
Mm.
And community is extremely important to me. That's one of the things I liked about Stack Exchange. That's one of the things I love about being an MVP is I get to spend a lot of time with community. And the effort that Chef was putting into making the Microsoft community part of their community and them being part of Microsoft's community really kind of drew me there, and as well as the fact that they were kind of aligned with the Windows Server vision for management around PowerShell, desired state configuration, and kind of that whole data center abstraction layer concept.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
That Jeffrey Snover is kind of fond of. And,
just a little bit.
And so, you know, the Windows capabilities under Chef have been growing over time. And now we're kind of at a point where, in some cases, we've surpassed what you can do with Linux. In other cases, there's still some gaps. You know, I'm not going to kind of gild the lily here and say everything's roses. That I think we still need more Windows-specific resources in Core Chef, and we're going to be working to make that happen. Some of the tools in the ecosystem need to support Windows better, but that stuff's happening. We actually just released, so one of the one of the other kind of key differentiators that you find in the Chef ecosystem is a focus on testing. And so, you know, we've talked, I just mentioned, you know, hey, you've got this agent on your box. It's responsible for getting your systems to where they expect to be. I don't know about you, but it scares living crap out of me thinking that there is a agent running in the background on my servers, running code periodically and doing stuff to my machines. I want to be extremely confident that the state changes that they're going to make,
sure,
that the way they detect change on my systems, the way that they're going to remediate that is in a way that I expect them to behave. I don't want my whole web tier rebooting themselves all at the same time, for example, because a patch got applied and that caused a detection and change state, and now things were just kind of cascading. That kind of thing makes me very, very afraid. So I like to test all this stuff way ahead of time. And there's a lot of tools in the Chef ecosystem to help make testing easy, to help make testing possible, and to help make it part of your workflow. And one of those core components is Test Kitchen. And Test Kitchen allows you to spin up nodes locally in a cloud, a bunch of different providers for that, right? It lets you wire up a provisioner, which in this case we're talking to Chef, but it's swappable. I actually just finished publishing a desired state configuration provisioner, so you can use it to test DSC resources as well. Wow. And then you can say what configurations you want to apply, and these are called suites. And then you have a verifier system where you have some third-party component like Pester, which is a testing framework in PowerShell, or ServerSpec, which is a Ruby testing layer. You can then craft tests to verify that it got your systems to where that you expect them to be. So you're not relying on the config management tool to tell you, oh yeah, I stood up a web server for you. You actually can go and you write a little Pester test to connect to port 80 and verify the content there is what you expect, and to check that the file paths exist where you expect them to be. And so you're able to create this automation flow of, I craft my configuration, I spin up a node, have it apply that, and can verify independently from the config management tool that it did what I expect it to do.
Wow.
And therefore, I can have this high degree of confidence that when I deploy this into production, it's going to do what I expect it to do for my environment.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, definitely a key consideration when you're looking at orchestration. Yeah, because I agree. It is a really scary proposition to think that, hey, all this stuff's going to be happening in the background, unattended. It better darn well, as you said, be rock solid.
Yeah. So actually, the reason I detoured down that route was one of the big gaps was we didn't have strong Windows guest support there. And we shipped an RC of that just before ChefConf, and that's going to be shipping in a final version of Test Kitchen pretty soon.
Oh,
so,
great.
So, yeah, the whole, just, you know, as far as Windows support goes, it's an evolving story, but with our support for desired state configuration, our support for PowerShell, we actually support features in the Windows Management Framework that are still marked as experimental by the PowerShell team. So we, you know, we're actively, you know, kind of charging forward. If you saw the announcements around the Nano Server, we're working actively with Microsoft on building support for Nano Server as that marches towards release.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Chef is definitely invested in the Microsoft ecosystem and making that experience delightful.
And you, as part of that Microsoft ecosystem, you'd mentioned PowerShell and PowerShell DSC a few times in our conversation so far, and certainly that's a huge part of the existing Microsoft ecosystem. Lots of people know PowerShell and PowerShell DSC, and I think Chef was originally had like a lineage that was more derived from Ruby, right? But how do you feel that Chef makes someone that's a PowerShell or PowerShell DSC focused individual? How do you feel it helps make their life better or makes automation better using Chef on top of that?
Great question. So we have a couple of different ways that we leverage PowerShell. A lot of the core resources and things around and community resources around Windows actually use PowerShell behind the scenes. Ruby is kind of the foundation of our domain-specific language. Mm-hmm. And that's not planning to change, but the for PowerShell users, the amount of Ruby that you have to learn to be successful with Chef is very, very minimal. There's a lot of very similar concepts. We have like a little one page, like just enough Ruby for Chef page. And there's a lot of concepts that are very similar to PowerShell. So it doesn't feel too rough making the transition.
Okay.
And when you look at desired state configuration and you look at Ruby recipe,
mm-hmm.
they look very, very similar. And actually when we get to a demo point later, I can mm-hmm. show you exactly how similar they look.
Okay.
We're gonna look at a little DSC, we're gonna look at a little Chef, and you can see actually how close they look. The main way that, you know, the Windows focus guy who's very PowerShell specific, PowerShell centric, and very DSC centric is going to experience Chef is through the PowerShell script resource, which lets you embed a little snippet of PowerShell and have that run as part of your configuration or a part of your recipe as it's being applied.
Okay.
And we have two resources around DSC. We have DSC script, which supports Windows Management Framework 4 and above. And that just lets you embed a little bit of the DSC syntax into your recipe or point at an existing configuration. So if you have guys who are building DSC configurations, you don't have to go throw them away if you want to use Chef. You can actually just have a recipe that points to it, and you now also get the whole benefit of the Chef ecosystem. You get the capabilities of Chef Server, which include things like the dynamic data discovery and being able to search across all your nodes and pull back specific results. You get some of the data encryption capabilities of encrypted data bags or Chef Vault, which is a way to get encrypted data out to your nodes. And you also get the benefit of your configurations are being compiled at runtime so that you get to respond to things in your environment. Where with desired state configuration, you're compiling your MOF up front and then distributing that out. And then any reactiveness you have has to be embedded in your resources.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's a few other little niceties. There's some things that DSC does not offer yet that Chef does. And as you get into the language, you start to understand where you can actually do notifications between resources where... If something changes state, I can say, hey, tell something else to go, like if I change a file, I can tell a service to go restart, for example.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then the last one is DSC resource, and that's the thing we most recently shipped. That is requires Windows Management Framework 5, the February preview or newer, and that leverages invoke DSC resource, and that's where we can actually just turn the local configuration manager, that's DSC's agent,
mm-hmm, right.
And we turn that just into an API. And so we can actually, any DSC resource on the box now is a Chef resource.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so right from there, it's a very thin layer to get into desired state configuration. And Windows-focused admins who have strong PowerShell skills can continue to develop DSC resources and then leverage them in their Chef recipes rather than maybe necessarily going and spending a lot of time learning some of the intricacies of Ruby and building their own Ruby cookbooks that expose their own resources. We call them lightweight resource providers.
Gotcha. Okay, that sounds great. Yeah, that sounds great. Is it hard to get started with Chef from somebody that's a PowerShell person? It sounds like the skills between PowerShell and Ruby, in terms of how it's implemented in Chef, are really translatable, but there's some infrastructure components, right, that have to be set up in order to make that all work with the server and Chef clients and whatnot. Is it hard to get started in getting to the point of being able to leverage Chef in an environment?
Not at all. So first off, there's if you have a good PowerShell background, if a good command line background, that's going to help you tremendously. Because pretty much everything you do through one of these config management tools, whether it's desired state configuration, whether it's Puppet, whether it's Chef, Ansible Salt, whatever, they're all doing some sort of command line automation in the background. So as long as you're comfortable with that concept and how that works, that's going to translate and help you be successful with these config management tools.
Gotcha.
Understanding source control. That's something that a lot of IT departments don't do or aren't familiar with, But according to the Puppet Labs State of DevOps survey, that's one of the key correlators if IT operations uses source control for high-performing IT organizations. Understanding source control, that's another good kind of prerequisite or at least area of study that you want to have as you look into this. Mm-hmm. But as far as getting started specifically with Chef, it's actually, we try to make it pretty easy. We have a hosted SaaS offering, so you don't have to spin up your own Chef server. Mm-hmm. You can have 6 nodes for free, so it's really easy to do a kind of this little proof of concept without having to spin up your own server. You just sign up for a free account, and you can create a organization with some with up to 6 nodes. You got a nice management UI there to kind of let you explore and kind of get you started. We have a walkthrough on learn.chef.io that will actually walk you through some of the basics of Chef, get you familiar with what a resource is, help you get the client tools installed. We'll spin up a node for you in, I think, CloudShare right now. Mm-hmm. We'll spin up a node for you there that you can use, or we tell you what the specs are to do something locally.
Okay.
And then you can kind of play around, get comfortable with some of the syntax, some of the concepts, what's a resource, what's a recipe, what's a cookbook, kind of get those terms down. For as far as like the tooling, there's a Chef client, but we have a Chef development kit, which is what, if you're going to be kind of authoring Chef resources or authoring Chef recipes and configurations, that's where we bundle actually Chef client, a new tool called Chef, which has some workflow stuff to help you out, as well as things like Test Kitchen and Chef Spec, which is a testing framework for actually testing your run list before you actually apply anything. And things like Food Critic, which is a linting tool to help kind of catch common errors and make sure it's syntactically correct before you use it. That's kind of where some of this testing stuff comes from. Several of these projects aren't stuff that we build. They're community tools that we find valuable enough to the workflow of working with Chef that we package, ship, and support.
Gotcha. And so you'd mentioned the SaaS offering, and imagine people could also download and run Chef Server on-prem if they were a larger organization. Is that right as well?
Of course. Yep. Yeah. Chef Server is actually all open source. Okay. And so you can download Chef Server, install it. It runs on Linux right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any plan to change that. I've toyed with trying to get it running on Windows, but I think I'm going to wait for Nano Server. And
that's a great idea, actually. Yeah.
And plus, I'm hoping I have a little more free time by that. by the time that ships. But you can also we have a Chef Server image in Azure, in the Azure Marketplace.
Okay. So
you can
just
spin up an instance there. And one of the other cool integrations we have with Azure, and this is something I haven't seen in a lot of cloud environments yet. Google Compute Engine now has something similar, but the Azure VM agent, right? So it enables a whole bunch of integrations, and one of those is Chef Client. And there's another for desired state configuration, but with the Chef Client, you can actually, through the Azure portal or through the API, you can provision the Chef Client and point it to your Chef Server and provide it a key so it can register itself with your Chef Server.
Gotcha.
And then because that's available through the API as well, we have a command line tool, Knife Azure, that will allow you to fire up new instances on Azure, and as well as to use that cloud API, that API from Azure, to get your Chef client on there. The nice thing about it is instead of going back to Chef to download Chef client as part of the startup process, you're hitting the CDN at Microsoft. It's already right there, kind of pre-staged, real fast.
Yeah. That's sick.
And you actually don't actually have to. You don't need direct access to the machine from your workstation to make that happen. That's the other really nice thing. So you don't have to set up like WinRM forwarding or SSH forwarding through the cloud service to get there from your machine. You don't have to make sure your machine can communicate through outbound proxies or anything else. As long as you can hit the Azure API, the VM agent is a definite win there.
Ah, okay, gotcha. Yeah, so that kind of bootstraps the Chef client inside the Azure VMs that are being provisioned. And so, yeah, so you could use Knife Azure to do that fabric level provisioning, or probably really any Azure provisioning tool, Azure Automation or Azure PowerShell module or what have you, anything that can call that VM agent API and bootstrap the Chef client, right?
Yep, and we're working to bring that same capability into Chef provisioning, which allows you to basically build a Chef recipe that allows you to describe your infrastructure in terms of machines and create self-healing infrastructure. But it can also it will also be able to leverage that Azure VM agent, which is a pretty cool capability.
Gotcha. And through that, with that VM agent, then your Chef server could be probably any of those three options, right, that you described. Yep. You can have a software as a service delivered hosted Chef server environment, a Chef server that you've provisioned as an Azure VM if you're in a kind of a hybrid cloud environment where you want to keep everything inside your own virtual networking environment, mm-hmm. or if you have some sort of connectivity back to your on-prem private cloud, you could have the Chef server running private cloud. It probably doesn't really matter where the Chef server is running at that point, right, as long as there's a connection path.
Yep, as long as you have HTTPS back to it, you're good to go. Right. And, you know, you mentioned a couple different scenarios there. You mentioned hybrid cloud, you mentioned on-prem, and fully in the cloud. And one of the great things about using a tool like Chef to describe your infrastructure is you're dealing with it at the OS level, and you don't necessarily have to care about where it's running.
Right.
There's a systems inventory part of Chef called OHI, which will actually gather a bunch of machine data. Oh. And depending on what environment, you can actually provide it some hints too and say, hey, this node's running in Azure. And hey, this node's running on-premise. And then you can use that actually as part of the determination in your recipe. Say, hey, I need to do some Azure-specific stuff, or I need to make sure that my routing is set up right so that I use my express route, you know, internally to get back to machines or whatever kind of concepts you need to do with that, versus I'm on-prem, so I know I'm here, so I know I can talk to this SQL server, or if I'm in Azure, I know I need to talk to SQL Azure. So yeah, you might have some differentiators there. Yeah. And so, you know, using a tool like Chef can definitely help accelerate and make the jump from, you know, on-prem to hybrid to cloud, or even just stay hybrid. You know, some hybrid is a good scenario.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. So it sounds like there's lots of options to pretty quickly get started with Chef Server and Chef Client. Steve, would you be willing to have us switch over into your lab and have you walk through a demo of some of the capabilities that Chef brings to the table?
You bet. All right, Keith. So right now we're on actually one of my nodes in Azure. And I have a DSC configuration here that we're going to take a look at. And what I'd like to show you is just kind of the different stages that you can go through in going from a DSC configuration into a Chef recipe and see how little you actually have to change at things. And also kind of highlight a few of the comparable features and you know, where things are. Like, so if you've done some desired state configuration or you've been kind of been looking at it, you've heard about these, you know, there's a new keyword in the PowerShell lexicon, configuration, as well as node. And so what I have here is a configuration that will actually go through, install IIS if it's not there already, make sure it's running, stop the default website if it's not been stopped already, and not spill water on my workstation. And I tend to talk with my hands and things can kind of get dangerous. And then there's a little bit of configuration data, which I'll expand here, that the node that I've defined, in this case localhost, actually is supposed to have two sites, one dedicated to clowns and one dedicated to bears. And the clown site should be on port 80, the bear site should be on port 81. So that data is available if when I run my configuration, if I pass that configuration data to it. And so that's part of my node here. And so I'll say, you know, for each of the sites and nodes, I want you to go through and stand up a website. And it will create a directory for that, create the web app pool, the website, the bindings, and then also lay down just like a little Hello World page.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So not super complicated, but gives you an idea of what that DSC configuration is going to look like and gives us something to compare against when we look at Chef. Mm-hmm. So the first one we're going to take a look at is, so I showed you the configuration data where we have the clowns and bears metadata. Mm-hmm. The analog in the Chef ecosystem is attributes. And in your cookbook, you can actually package up attributes. You can also provide them as environmental data or role data via your Chef server. But you can supply defaults with your with a cookbook. So, you know, kind of ship with some default parameter values. Mm-hmm. And so for this case, I've got those same values, my clowns and bear site, and they're going to be on port 80 and 81 respectively.
Gotcha.
So that's it. The hash table syntax for Ruby is very much like this hash table syntax for PowerShell.
Mm-hmm.
The one difference you might notice is this, what they call a hash rocket. And it's equals with an arrow. And that's just Ruby's way of saying assign this key this particular value.
Gotcha. Okay.
So when you see that hash rocket, it's nothing major. It's just it's an assignment inside of a hash table. So PowerShell doesn't have that, so we don't really have to look at that too heavily. But it looks a little different. But that's just one of the minor little differences. In pretty much all cases, hash tables in Ruby behave almost the exact same way as hash tables in PowerShell.
Okay, great.
And the nice thing is configuration data is pretty much hash tables, so it's very easy to translate kind of between the two concepts.
Mm.
All right. So very similarly to the configuration that we just looked at, we have to import our custom module. I don't think I actually highlighted that to begin with. In desired state configuration, if you're using a non-default resource, like the resources that ship in the home directory for PowerShell, you have to explicitly tell the configuration, I want to use that. And so you have to do this import DSC resource.
Okay.
And you have the same capability in DSC script, in the DSC script resource inside of Chef. So you can say, hey, I want to use this, in this case, the Chef comp samples.
Mm-hmm.
And then this stuff right here, the Windows feature, service, website, that's all just DSC. That's a snippet of DSC that I just stick right into my Chef recipe. And Chef will then, when it's time to run this recipe, go to the local configuration manager and say, hey, here's the DSC configuration to run. You go do it.
Gotcha.
And Chef client is just actually then going to take a look at the results, parse the results, and figure out, oh, hey, one of three resources got updated, and can provide that information back to you as part of your Chef run.
Gotcha. So the DSC configuration could be pasted right in, almost like a here document inside the Ruby configuration.
That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. So this little setup IIS, so this is how we do here documents in Ruby, is you have less than, and then that minus just says don't burn a line, don't make this just an empty line.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's not super important in this case. In some contexts it is. And then you just have some identifier that you're going to use at the beginning and at the end of that here document.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
And so in PowerShell... Yep, PowerShell here string is @ quote.
Quote, right.
And then close with quote @. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's just you get to pick some random identifier.
Okay, great.
Yep, and then just like what we did in the previous one, now I have a little space here so it's easier to see, instead of iterating over node.sites, I'm iterating over my attribute of my site's attribute here. And so... unlike a for each loop in PowerShell, in Ruby we just call a dot each on the collection.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of parens, we have a do and end.
Gotcha.
And this is how we declare variables that gets passed in there. So because we're passing in a hash, we'll get the key and the value.
Okay.
And so that's how we can use then those Ruby variables or the Ruby hash the data from the Ruby hash inside of my here doc that has has my PowerShell DSC stuff, so I can change things dynamically at runtime.
Gotcha.
So, and it just kind of walks through and creates the rest of the stuff. Instead of using the file resource, I use the template resource from Ruby, because it actually does what we want to do better than trying to make the file resource create custom templates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the big wins in using desired state configuration plus Ruby or plus Chef, is you can mix and match. I can take the best, you know, if one of the experimental resources from the PowerShell team, like the X Web Administration module, if that stands up a website better than, say, the IIS cookbook, mm-hmm. in our ecosystem, and that actually, I don't quite know which one does it quite better. They both have bugs. It's kind of picking which one works best for your environment.
Sure.
But if the X Web Administration stands up a website for me better than the IIS cookbook does, I can just use it. So you have this kind of freedom of choice, and then as the DSC ecosystem grows, and as the Chef ecosystem around Windows grows, you have your choice, and you can leverage both as you need to, and be able to get the best experience for your configuration management.
Sure, well, that makes sense. Yeah, it gives you a lot more choices in terms of, instead of aligning to just one ecosystem, there's a couple that you have that you can combine together pretty easily.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's DSC script. That's how that would look. But what's more interesting, and because it's relatively recent, and it uses an experimental feature off the latest Windows Management Framework, is the DSC resource. Not quite in love with how the name rolls up on there, but you know, it is what it is. So it describes it accurately, and what that allows you to do is just take the name of, or just to take the resource, the DSC resource, and describe it in a more Chef-like manner, so it looks more like native Chef resources. So if we go back real quickly at the bottom of the DSC script demo, now all of these things are available out on GitHub. I'll make sure you have the link for this before we wrap up.
Sure.
But this is all of these samples, the DSC script, these Chef scripts, as well as instructions and how to set up an environment to run them, is all available. But this is a Ruby resource, a Chef resource in Ruby, right? And you have your identifier, you have a name, you have a do and end block that where you have some descriptors of properties. Very, 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 very similar to a DSC resource. But there's a few differences. You don't see equal signs. You have some things like Ruby symbols and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the DSC resource allows you to use DSC resources very much like they are Chef resources. Gotcha. So instead of having a DSC script embedded where I have a little snippet of DSC, I can actually declare it like with DSC resource and say the resource I want to use is Windows feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to pass it a property of the name property of web server. And that will make sure IIS is installed. Now,
gotcha.
In addition to just being a little different syntactically, there's performance benefits, because in this case, since we're using the Windows Management Framework 5, they included an API in there and a commandlet invoke DSC resource that allows you to just do one-off invocations of individual resources without actually having, and one part of it, I can either do the set, or I can do the test, or I can do the get, and I'm not actually relying on the local configuration manager to create this configuration in memory, or to create it and then to run through and validate and then make sure it does any changes.
Mm.
It lets Chef control that process, or any other third party who we want to integrate that way. Gotcha. And so what that does is there's a lot less overhead from the local configuration manager, so it's much, much faster to perform. So DSC resource, if you have the ability to run Windows Management Framework 5, this is a much more performant way of doing it than with DSC script. DSC script will still get it done. It's not overly horrendous as far as, you know, how long it takes to run things.
Mm-hmm.
And it is backward compatible all the way to Windows Management Framework 4.
Mm-hmm.
But DSC Resource is kind of a better route moving forward to go.
Sure. Yeah. And for people that are currently leveraging Chef today and are really familiar with the Ruby language, this extends that. It seems like with leveraging DSC resources as a whole new set of resources that Chef can natively call versus DSC script, in some cases, might be an easier starting point if individuals are coming more from a PowerShell DSC standpoint and want to be able to take their existing DSC configurations, quickly leverage them without having to do as much conversion. Is that, am I thinking about that correctly, do you think? Or
exactly. Yeah. And there's the PowerShell script resource as well, so you can actually leverage some of the other just one-off PowerShell scripts you have. So in this sample, we actually looked at just embedding code directly in here. You can also pass it a path to a file. So in the DSC, with DSC script, you don't actually have to embed that snippet inside your recipe. You can actually say, hey, I've got a DSC script over here that I want you to use.
Okay.
And so, you might not even have to do as much, copy-paste to begin with. It,
right.
We actually have, I've talked to some folks who, they have a group that's, all they manage is Windows. They're really comfortable with PowerShell. They want to go down the DSC route, but the ecosystem that they're working in uses Chef for configuration management. That's a really good touch point to integrate the two things and to let, let Chef drive the DSC, but build DSC configurations to do what you need them to do. You don't lose anything. You just gain the capabilities of Chef, as well as, the additional metadata that you can have and search and decide to do things with and all that. So let's actually run this. We can talk as it runs. Is the font size big enough for you there?
Maybe a little larger. Yeah.
Oh, let's go up one more. I thought I went up one more. I did. So let's go
there.
Even more.
Yeah.
All right. So right now I'm going to run the DSC resource version of the configuration that we looked at, and we can run other ones if we want later, but we'll run this, make sure it runs through and kind of see what the output looks like. I'm going to use Chef client, and the -z is local mode. It's not the, there's also -- local mode. I just did this for brevity on the command line. What that does is it spins up a Chef server in memory and can run the, can run this recipe. Recipes are defined with the cookbook that they live in. I called it basic website, and then the name of the recipe, which is the one we looked at, DSC resource. I could actually have registered this with Chef Server, but for an interactive demo, this actually tends to work a little more consistently.
Sure.
You don't have to worry about network connectivity, things like that. So we're going to get this running here. And one of the benefits of this local mode is that it actually emulates all the APIs that you care about from Chef Server from the standpoint of running a configuration. So you could actually stub it out with environment data, so you could test how it would behave inside your actual environment. And that's one more of those things that makes testing and realistic testing possible inside the environment.
Sure, that makes sense.
So it's spinning up here. I don't recall what class of VM I spun up here. I think it was
small, maybe
A4 or something.
So it's going through and basically using the local configuration manager as its own agent, so to speak, right, for feeding in the appropriate DSC resources that it's running through.
Yep. Yeah. So the first thing it had to do, so if you're using invoke DSC configuration, invoke DSC resource or the DSC resource, the first thing you actually have to do is disable the local configuration manager. And the reason you have to do that is you don't want dueling config management systems. You don't want somebody, using it as an API and somebody else actually shipping a configuration to it and expecting it to check that.
Sure.
Because you're just setting yourself up for heartache.
Yeah.
Right. And it's also like trying to set, settings with the GPO that you're also going to try to configure with Chef or desired state configuration.
Right.
You're just setting yourself up for some heartache and troubleshooting.
Right.
And so the PowerShell team actually requires you to set the local configuration manager refresh state to disabled. Mm-hmm. So so DSC cannot process configurations. It can only run in this API mode.
Gotcha.
And so that's the first thing we did there. And then now it's actually installing IIS.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll proceed to doing the other steps. And it takes a little, you can see the progress bar for the install Windows feature there running away.
Yeah.
And while it's running, I'll just show you real quick here. Out on GitHub, I've got the ChefConf samples. There's a little README that actually runs through how to set this whole thing up to make it work. Windows Managed Framework 5, these are like the top level requirements to make every single feature work. Mm-hmm. You can actually run a couple of the samples on Windows Management Framework 4, but if you want to do the DSC resource one, you need Windows Managed Framework 5, the February preview. And they've actually made that available for Server 2012 as well. Mm. That was actually a change to the pattern of Windows Management Frameworks, was that it used to be that if you wanted to use Keith, did you know about the experimental designs and stable features change to the Windows Management Framework?
No, I haven't heard about that.
So back in November, the PowerShell team actually ships these updates roughly quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the November release, they added this concept of stable designs and experimental features. So previously, with the Windows Management Framework, everything that you did had to be kind of in a non-production environment. Because if you installed it and something wasn't working, you weren't going to get support on it.
Mm.
Well, that's kind of a challenge, because it's like, hey, here's this release. We want you to test it. We want you to do stuff with it, but don't install it in production.
Right. Yeah, right.
And yeah, so that could kind of be a little off-putting, and like, hey, you know, the only thing I have time to work in is production. So right. If you want me to use this, maybe I'll install it on my workstation, but I won't install it anywhere else, and that can still lead to some funkiness. And so one of the things they started doing with the November preview is they came out with this concept of experimental designs and stable features. If you install the Windows Management Framework 5 in production, you can use anything that's marked as a stable design,
okay,
and still get support from Microsoft support on that.
Okay, gotcha.
And experimental features are on a fixed forward basis, like, hey, and these things might change and there might be breaking changes.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're marked as a stable design, they're considered production worthy.
Gotcha.
And so our shift run's completed here, but some of the capabilities in there's a good number of capabilities in Windows Management Framework 5. Now, the frameworks have always been available for kind of the latest OS, but starting in February, they started shipping down level. Mm. And so now you actually have the management framework available for Server 2012 as well. And I've heard rumblings that they're trying to get it out for 2008 R2 in one of these upcoming previews as well.
Ah, okay.
So that means Windows Management Framework 5 is going back down level, and it's available in production. So you can start leveraging some of these great capabilities. Now, I mentioned that Invoke DSC Resource is still marked as experimental.
Right.
So that, you know, that API may change, but we support it.
Okay.
So we had our chef run. You see a bunch of stuff here showing how the local configuration manager was actually going through and mm-hmm. using their direct resource access method, sure that websites were stood up. And this is very similar to the logging you'd see out of a chef resource. Like here we have a template resource
mm-hmm.
where it went and created a new file, just like we see, you know, the logging from DSC. DSC logging looks a little bit different because that's the logging pattern that Zard State Configuration Resources use. But at the very end, we can see that it ran, 14 of 16 resources were updated, and gave us the length of time of the run. Gotcha. Now, if I were to run this again, it would complete much faster because things would be in the right state and we wouldn't have to install IIS again. But I think this kind of can give you an idea of how Chef and DSC can kind of play nice together and come together to manage the system. Let's actually make sure it worked before I get all confident. And so I'm just going to browse over to localhost. And let's see what we get here. Hey, there's our We Love Clowns. And then let's take a look at localhost on port 81. And we have our We Love Bears. Awesome. So it stood up my two websites. If we went into IIS Manager, which I actually didn't install, you'd see them in there. We could run PowerShell and see them. Let's see. Get website. And we see the default website stopped, which was what we asked for. We created the Clowns and the Bears website and their correct locations, correct ports. And hey, everything's fine. So
awesome.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, a nice way that Chef and DSC work together to kind of help manage Windows systems. And websites not necessarily always the most the most useful example, but it's easiest one to demonstrate.
Well, it's a good example that shows lots of dependent resources and whatnot as well. Yeah, so that's great. That's great. Wow, that's a great demo, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us today and walking through some of the capabilities that Chef has around easily leveraging our built-in knowledge around PowerShell DSC, but extending that with the capabilities that Chef can provide.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for the chance and for some of the great questions, because I get a lot of these questions often, like once a week. And so being able to kind of talk through this and show some of the stuff off in a venue like this definitely helps, because I can, hey, go check this out. And
right.
If you still want to listen to me, then come out and we'll talk. And
right. Definitely. But, that's been great. And along the way, we talked about a lot of resources, the learn.chef.io site for helping individuals just get started with Chef, learn how to get started. And I think you and Damien also did an MVA recently, right? A Microsoft Virtual Academy training class on Chef and Azure together, is that right?
We did, and we also recently did a presentation together at ChefConf on desired state configuration and the integration with Chef.
Oh, great, so. Great. So we'll be sure to provide links to all that good stuff down at the bottom of the page that everyone's watching this episode on as well, so that they can easily link over to your blog, my blog, the learn.chef.io site, the Azure Marketplace site for the new Chef Server 12 that's easily deployed in the Azure Marketplace, as well as your hosted offerings for Chef, and the MVA, the MVA Jumpstart on Chef. Well, great. So again, thanks so much, Steve, for joining us today. And thank you, everyone, for joining us as well. We hope to see you back for our next episode on TechNet Radio of Building Your Hybrid Cloud. Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.